7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Good afternoon, Croc Nation. Dr. Tommy and Ellie here driving the cancer survivorship bus on the other side of the glass. Professor Angel Santana, happy Wednesday, Angel.
Happy Wednesday. And I can tell you that I'm not getting used to, but I'm getting used to being apart from you. But this is driving me crazy because the magic also happens when we're right next to each other.
Yeah, but I got to tell you, I love seeing you in your little home studio, and you have your little baby in the other room. You're right where you need to be. That's right where God wants you.
You got me there.
So, Angel, are you excited? Because I have to tell you, we are going to be starting a brand new module. We have 3 episodes in a row. I feel like we're Mike Tyson. We're going to do left jab, left jab, right hook, knockout. That's what we're doing. And you know what we're doing there, my friend? What the module is going to be?
No, what is the module?
The module is going to be, I am a nurse. What is your superpower?
Ooh.
What do you think about that?
And you know what? Coming off of the heels of a surgery, let me tell you, there's just nothing more powerful than being in the presence of a nurse. They are the backbone. They are heroes.
They are heroes. And as a matter of fact, actually, you're part of the reason. You're one of my motivators for many reasons to move into nursing, acknowledgement and to lift them up and to give them a shout out, because there is a week in May that's National Nurses Week, and our nurses, we put on a pedestal. As a matter of fact, I always start with a story, Angel.
I'm waiting for it. I mean, we've had the ice cream.
You knew a story was coming, right?
Listen, I'm already filled up from the ice cream, from the trips. Let's go.
July 1986, my first week of internship. I'm in the East Orange Veterans Administration Hospital. It was part of the hospital system of where I was doing my first year internship. And this was in the day where, you know, doctors didn't go home when they were on call, and they stayed in the hospital for days before they went home. And you could imagine how stressful that must have been. And, you know, all of us, all the interns, we have this new title. We are now doctors. We are not just medical students or doctors in training. We are actually doctors. But do you know what we know? We don't even know enough. What we don't know, we don't even know. That's how much we don't know. And at least sometimes you're smart enough to know how dumb you are. We weren't even smart enough to know how dumb we were. And, you know, one of the things, and I remember that first day, the dean or the head of the residency program had all the interns who we were white as a sheet. And we were sitting in that room, and he was basically telling us our responsibilities and scaring the living daylights out of us. And he said, don't underestimate the necessity and wisdom from your nurses. Now, so we're all these young doctors, and we think that we're all that in a bag of chips. And, you know, the first day comes by, and, you know, I'm not on call. I ended up being on call, I think, on July 3rd or whatever. And that was the first day where I was shockingly, you know, mortified, terrified. And I walk into the hospital. It was a Saturday, and I'll never forget. And, you know, I didn't know what to expect. And my resident, who was supposed to be the person lifting me up and teaching me and helping me get through, was absolutely useless. And I was kind of on my own. And as the day went on, I started getting worn down and worn down. And about 11 o'clock at night, I was just trying to get to my little cot, you know, to maybe get an hour of sleep. And the phone rings. Now, we didn't have cell phones in those days. We had beepers, and we had a phone in the on-call room. And I got this call from this frantic 70-year-old, 5-foot-nothing, you know, 100-and-nothing-pound nurse by the name of Mrs. DeFranzo. And Mrs. DeFranzo was a VA horse. She was a VA nursing mule. She must have been in the VA since World War II. You know, she was about 100 years old. and she worked the detox unit. Now, sadly, our veterans, especially in those days, had a lot of issues with post-traumatic stress, and many of them, unfortunately, were, had addiction issues and alcohol notably. And they had a special unit in East Orange. It was called the detox unit. And DeFranzo started screaming at me and commanding me to come to the detox unit because one of the vets was decompensating. And I was so tired. I said, "Fran DeFranzo, get him on the phone." And I got this guy on the phone. He was going through the full DTs. He was totally, completely psychotic. And I said, "If you don't get in your bed right now, I'm going to come up there and I'm going to beat the living crap out of you." And, you know, here he is jumping on the bed, and DeFranzo says, "You better come up here and take care of this guy." And of course I didn't. And the poor guy ended up going into seizures, and it was a terrible, terrible thing. The reason why I say this with any sort of levity is because obviously the guy was fine, you know, everything worked out. But the reason why I say is the next day, you know, I'm exhausted, didn't sleep a wink. And I get called into the chief resident's office, Dr. Joanne Rodriguez, and Dr. Rodriguez calls me in, and she was a tremendous doctor, just amazing. I hope she's still practicing. She was just a great role model, a great friend, a great person. And she called me in the office and she said, "You know, I heard that you didn't do your job last night." I go, "What are you talking about?" He goes, "You know, that guy over in the detox unit, he ended up going into the DTs, had seizures, the whole thing." I go, "I thought the nurse was out of her mind. I mean, she's crazy, this lady." She goes, "You know what? She may be crazy, but you better listen to your nurses because they know what's going on. And Tom, quite frankly, you don't know shit from shinola. You better listen to your nurses." And from that moment on, that was my first and only lesson that I needed, was to know what a resource nurses are. Now I'm 35 years in practice, and, you know, nurses are, you know, I must have worked with tens of thousands of nurses over the years. And to this day, I still can't do enough to uplift them, to honor them, to tell everyone how important they are, to tell everyone what an amazing unsung job they have. And what I thought we would do, in honor of your podcast that motivated me, in honor of National Nursing Week, in honor of these heroes who've been through, and again, we're going to talk to oncology nurses, of course, but imagine all the nurses that were working in the ICUs and in critical care over the last 2 years or year and a half with the coronavirus, many of them getting sick, some of them actually dying. So talk about real heroes. I mean, talk about frontline workers. I mean, way more frontline than the doctors, for sure. Mm-hmm. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to spend 3 episodes, and I'm extraordinarily excited. So check this out. Today, for this podcast, we're going to be talking to my 2 nurse practitioners. They could tell you all of the weird and wild things that I do, and probably tell a lot of stories about me, which I hope they do. And kind of talk a little bit about nurse practitioners, advanced practitioners in oncology, radiation oncology. But really what they're here for, and they've been told this, they're going to help set the table for a really amazing podcast, which is going to follow. Now, check this out. Do you remember Professor Len Berry that we yes. had on our podcast? So Len is a professor of marketing down at Texas A&M. He did that defining survivorship module with Dr. Deming, where he discussed a different view on survivorship, the term survivorship, how there was some people who didn't really identify with that terminology. It was a very brave paper. It was a very important paper. And when I was in vacation, everybody knows, whoever listens to the podcast know that I was in Arizona a few weeks ago. And while I was away, I brought my computer with me, and I get this email from Len. Remember, Len has a visiting professorship over in Denmark, University of Denmark, I think. And he collaborated with a couple of nurse practitioners, advanced practitioners, and doctors, as well as a amazing practitioner, nursing professional in Ontario. I'm sorry, in Ottawa. And they published this really important work that we're going to talk about next week, about shared decision-making and how nurses can really We need to help nurses do more. They can do so much more than we're letting them. And we're actually going to be speaking, doing a Zoom on a Saturday between College Station, Texas, between the Hudson Valley, New York, between Ottawa, Canada, and Copenhagen, Denmark, I believe, is where the other two women are from. And Angel and I will be bringing that to you. And then we will finish this small little module with the continuation of discussion as far as international differences and trends in how nurses are utilized in the oncology setting. So couldn't be more excited, setting the table for the next couple of weeks. And please, I'm really hopeful that you all will participate and join in and give us some feedback about these podcasts and maybe even like a quick little email to us about shout outs. Tell us about your nursing heroes, maybe some experiences you might've had with an amazing nurse. Angel, you just had your kidney stone taken out. I'm sure many angels of mercy touched you and made a big impact with you.
Oh yeah. That's actually coming up on a very special edition. And I'll, you know, my show to describe a couple of unique things that had happened during that, that week. But just to piggyback what you said, for those of you that didn't catch that episode, which was part of that module, that is under your, our website, you know, the, www.crocvip.com /podcast, but take a look at it. It's episode 5. I would encourage everyone to listen to the entire module, but it's episode 5. It's defining survivorship, module 4, a different point of view. So that's, we can relate to that.
Super duper. And I'd like to now introduce our two guests for today. And it's kind of funny.
They're in the wings, by the way. They're in the
Fantastic. Fantastic. Well, I hired these two ladies quite a few years ago. And I have to tell you, I practiced for whatever 30 years alone. And me and Dr. Gonzalez and I, my poor mother is rolling in her grave with my poor grammar. But you know, we were doing this all alone forever and ever and ever. And, you know, the work was getting tedious and we were getting older and I kept noticing some of my colleagues, many of my colleagues, if not most of my colleagues, were starting to lean on advanced practitioners, physician assistants, nurse practitioners. And I started paying attention and I met Louise Eaton. Louise is a tremendous, first of all, both of these women, Louise Eaton and Jessica Machado, amazing women, intelligent, caring, compassionate, empathetic women. Both are, again, superheroes. They're married. They have children. Just had a baby. She's actually out on family leave right now. Jess, you can come back anytime now. You know, please.
It's funny you just said that because
bring the baby over. You leave the baby in my office. We'll give them, you know, we'll give them a bottle or whatever. Give them a binky
and just knocked. She's actually right now in the weights for me to hit her in. So she's ready to go.
Yeah. Louise Eaton, I'll introduce first. So because she was my first nurse practitioner, Louise hails from Warwick, New York. She's a wonderful nurse practitioner specializing in radiation oncology, general oncology. She has all of her certifications. She actually, has some extra schooling. She went to school first for social work. We're going to ask her about this. Went back to school for nursing. She went to William Patterson, went to Montclair State, did a master's in nutrition, bounced around the nutritional world, went back to nursing, got her master's in nursing from Mount St. Mary's, which is a tremendous program, and then went to Hackensack for a while and was working with bone marrow transplant patients in the cancer center. Really big time stuff. Really lucky to have her. She has a great knowledge base and just a tremendous woman. Jess Machado, Andres is a fantastic woman as well. Just had a little baby boy. The world is just opening up to her. She's just getting in stride. Really, another great practitioner. Went to Seton Hall for nursing, which is a powerhouse for nursing. Then went to Fairleigh Dickinson, got her nurse practitioner degree. Has done some great jobs. She worked at Memorial for a while. She met Louise at Hackensack in the bone marrow transplant program. They became fast friends. Louise ended up here, and then Louise and I did everything possible to recruit her. We gave Jess a signing bonus of a eggplant Parmesan sandwich. That was her signing bonus, and she accepted, thankfully. And now I have the two greatest women in the world helping me. So without further ado, let's get these gals on the podcast.
All right. So here we go. We're going to admit Jess right now. So she'll be coming in a second. And while we admit these two young ladies into the podcast, we're going to take a quick pause as we're doing the introductions. We're going to fix the audios on them and we'll be right back. We'll take a small commercial break as we introduce the two heroes of this edition of the Croc Podcast. We'll be right back.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome back, Croc Nation. Angel Santana on the other side of the glass and across the way in my computer, two of the most beautiful, accomplished, smart, intelligent, compassionate, empathetic human beings I have ever met. We are luckily, happily, gratefully joined by Louise Eaton, Jess Machado. Welcome, ladies. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
It's yes. My pleasure. I thought you guys don't get enough of me in your 12 hours a day with me. I thought you would want to spend your own personal time with me on the computer doing a Zoom. That's kind of what my thought process was. Was I right?
Absolutely.
You are so good. So good at reading people.
There you go. I have that gift. I've been told that. I can see all the red flags. That's a real strong point of me.
Well, thank you for that introduction. Very nice.
Wait till you hear it. You're going to be very happy. You guys, but you know, Angel, to be honest with you, I really feel very, very genuine about the things I said about Jess and Louise. I mean, they really changed my life. I told a little bit of a story of when I was an intern and learned the importance of listening to the wisdom of a nurse. And that was really my first and only lesson that I needed before I knew the value of having a nurse's input. And then, you know, I have to tell you, and we'll start with this subject. I'll let you guys comment on it. It was a real hard transition for me letting go. So Louise first, and then Jess to follow. I didn't trust them. I didn't think, you know, I had really done everything for so many years, so many decades. And here this little snotty kid comes in, you know, could be my daughter, and is starting to tell me all these things that they can do. And I'm like, really? Like, how old are you? I mean, really, you can't do any of this stuff. And then slowly, you know, the staff started wearing me down and, you know, they started showing how great they were and how unbelievably efficient and amazing workers, hard workers, never have to tell them anything. Basically, the work gets done. I just close my eyes. I will open my eyes. Work is done. And the patients are so well cared for. So it took me a while, right, Louise? But I think I'm getting there.
Yeah, I think I want to say I think it's kind of leaps and bounds. Yeah. And I would feel the same way with that transition. It would be very hard to let go. That's your baby, and it should be.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, physicians, me being representative of the old guard of, you know, kind of doing everything on their own and in the days where, you know, the doctors were something, you know, all that, as I say, in a bag of chips, and the nurses were wearing the little white paper hats and all that kind of stuff. And they were very subordinate. Now we have a new generation and it's a great thing. And believe me when I tell you, to have nurses that are expressing themselves professionally, you know, being able to be more than just, you know, a secondary member of the care team, being there for the patients, doing and where we're going with this is eventually really doing a lot of the heavy lifting and getting to shared decision making, some of the really important stuff going on in oncology. So I'm going to let Louise, I'll let you start just as far as your transition into going from medical oncology, radiation oncology. You did bone marrow transplantation. In your other life, you were a nutrition. You did nutrition. You have a master's in nutrition. Just you have a hell of a database to go from, a lot to offer our patients. When you come to work in the morning, you come in, you have so much to share. You know, what are your goals? What are some of the things that you want, you know, to see in your practice as a nurse practitioner in oncology?
First and foremost, I think I'm really just patient or customer service centered. I really do care about the patient and the experience that they have from us as a whole. And secondly, I want to feel very independent in my role so that I can be more efficient, and more efficient for the practice, more efficient for the patient, and more efficient for the provider that I'm working with. So one of the things that I read is calling nurse practitioners physician extenders. And I think that's another good way of just explaining the role so that they can see us as the provider and you do the heavy lifting in areas that I can't do. So there's definitely things that I know I'm never going to be capable of doing. But the other things, the task-oriented things, the management areas, the follow-up areas, and then just giving that extra TLC that nurses do. Those are the things I just want to excel at.
And I was going to say, Jess, you want to weigh in also?
Yeah, I mean, I think just to piggyback off of what Louise is saying, you know, we come from a background where we worked very closely with our patients. You know, they came in for their bone marrow transplant, so they were in the hospital for weeks, sometimes months, really got to know them and their families, and they trusted us in a way that, you know, sometimes they didn't trust the doctors in that way. They just kind of felt more comfortable with us because we became their family. Mm-hmm. So I think it's really important for me to continue that role wherever I go, you know, any position that I have. I want to treat my patients exactly the way I would want my own family to be treated. So that, to me, that's one of the biggest things. And, you know, I've been in situations where I don't like how my family or myself was treated by a provider, whether it be a nurse, a doctor, any staff member. So I think one of the biggest things is always just to remember, you know, how you want to be treated and how you want your loved ones to be treated, and always be your, you know, the patient's advocate, because that's, at the end of the day, that's really important.
And I think that you guys brought something up I want to spend a little bit of time on, and that's the concept of time. You know, in our practice, which is a very standard practice, there's patients lined up to see the doctor, and doctors are zipping in and out of rooms and spend a few minutes with each patient. I hope I do a little better than that, but I can't say that there aren't moments where, you know, I really just don't have the physical time. You guys do become close with your patients. Mm-hmm. You are able to spend more time with them. You know, I'll zip in and do, you know, some of the doctor stuff, but really, to be honest with you, they don't really need that. They really just need to be heard. They need mm-hmm. to spend space time with somebody. Tell me about how, if you agree with that.
Oh, absolutely. 110%. I think most of what our patients need is to just have that extra time to be heard. Especially when they come to radiation, I feel like they've been through a lot. And I feel like they get to us and they get towards the end of treatment and they start processing everything they've been through. And they start realizing they're having a hard transition with the next new normal of their life. I felt like I've seen that a lot the past 2 weeks with some of our patients. So just being able to talk them through that next phase and to help them anticipate that that kind of grieving process is very normal and healthy. And just helping them kind of open up the idea to have a different support system than the one they have at home, because sometimes the ones you have at home think that your journey is done now, when really for some people it's just beginning. It's the hardest part. So I think it's really important just to be able to spend that extra little bit of time to really dig down deep and find out what's the underlying issue of their emotional distress and how can we really address it and support them and help you know, anticipate that phase for them.
Yeah, that's very well said, Louise, because it's kind of funny. Angel and I actually did a podcast on the phases of survivorship, and it's that phase when they finish treatment, when they ring their bell or hit their gong or whatever, where they feel the most alone. And when you guys have that opportunity, Jess, maybe you can talk a little bit about radiation oncology nursing, nurse practitioning, in the sense that you really get a relationship with these patients, although they're not in the hospital for months mm-hmm. with a bone marrow transplant, you're seeing them all the time in the hospital, out of the hospital, outpatient setting, low blood counts, skin reactions. I mean, you really are developing relationships with these people, mm-hmm. getting them ready for that. What would you say? I say to my kids all the time, individuation, when they kind of get kicked out of their active treatment and they go out into the world.
Absolutely.
Fourth trimester. Like they call in pregnancy. I've been referring it to as it as the fourth trimester of pregnancy. It's like the next phase when everyone next thinks like, but really you have to adapt a new life altogether.
Yeah. And I think, Dr. E, just to kind of go off of what you were saying, you know, I think you need to give yourself a lot of credit too, because I've worked with doctors who really don't even take the fraction amount of time that you do with the patients. You really make them feel so comfortable. I've been in the room where, you know, you walk out and they're just, they go from A to Z, you know, with their, just their comfort level. They walk in anxious, like a new patient, new consult walks in, like completely anxious, terrified, have no idea what to expect. Doesn't even know anything about radiation, thinks it's like, you know, they're going to be radioactive, can't be near their family. And then you come in and you have such a gentle way of explaining everything, getting to know them and really making them feel at ease. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's, I appreciate that so much, just watching that. You know, I love it being in the room when you do that with some of the patients. Yeah. Really, it's great to witness and be a part of.
Yeah, thank you. And I'm part of just a great team. I think the four of us, Dr. Gonzalez and you guys and myself, we really are on the same page. I mean, if you remember the interview process, I mean, all I really cared about was the type of person you were and how much you cared about the patient, and that we all are on completely on the same page. So Pod Nation, Croc Nation, when you're out there looking at your doctors and your team, you really deserve to have a team that's on the same page. You really shouldn't have, you know, one doctor who's a little bit testy or whatever, and then another doctor who's a different way, and then the nurse practitioners are a different way. You really have to have a unified team. And I think that you guys would agree with that.
Oh, 100. Yeah, 100%.
Let me ask you guys a question that's going to be a little very visceral, because we all had to live through this. But coronavirus, oncology patients. I just personally did a podcast on a patient that we really had a bad experience, because it was a televisit, and then we were wearing masks and we didn't know who was who, and they saw you guys and they didn't see me as much and they didn't reach out to me. And, you know, and then at the end of the day, by you blink your eyes, treatment's over. And it's like, wow, I had a terrible experience. Coronavirus is isolating us. How are you guys viewing that? I mean, now we're kind of sort of coming out of it, but, you know, this year and a half, tell me about your experience over the last, you know, year and a half in radiation oncology with coronavirus.
Jess, you want to start?
Yeah, I mean, I think we were all going through it together. Nobody knew what the next step was going to be. You know, I didn't know anything more than what Louise knew about it, or Dr. Iannelli or Dr. Gonzalez or any of our patients. So we were going through it just as scared as our patients. But in addition, we had to be mindful that our patients have such, you know, a huge factor that they have to consider and really, you know, be there for them, trying to make them feel as comfortable as possible. Yeah, I mean, it was difficult doing consults via telemedicine. I mean, that's what kind of consult. I know personally, I wouldn't want something like that. You know, I would feel more comfortable going in and meeting my providers, who my team is going to be, and doing like an in-person visit. So it was a lot. You know, of learning and a curve for everybody. But I think we kind of did the best that we could with what we had, and, you know, to see how far we've come in a year and a little over a year, it's pretty amazing. Just even in the world, just to see how far, you know, we've come. And, you know, even now doing follow-ups, we still have to make people feel comfortable with what we're doing, and a lot of educating now about vaccinations, and just, you know, it was a lot of learning, a lot of educating others while we were learning ourselves. So it was a big learning curve for me, for sure.
Yeah. And I just want everybody to know that Louise and I just happened to get lucky. Dr. Gonzalez, we basically kicked him off site to keep him protected. And my poor Jesse, you know, got clobbered. She got coronavirus huge. You got so sick. You know, it was unbelievable. What a hero you were. And you just were, you felt so bad, and you couldn't taste or.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, I got it pretty much the beginning of March, which, you know, we didn't know much about it. I didn't know how many people I exposed, how long I was walking around with it. My biggest thing is, oh my God, all my patients that I was next to without, it was before the masks were even mandated, I believe. So it was horrible. I mean, as soon as I lost my sense of smell and taste. I knew that that's what it probably was, COVID. And at that time, I think I had to wait like 11 days to get my positive result. It's completely different than it is now. But the guilt, I mean, it was, I think I felt worse mentally than I did physically.
Yeah.
Yeah. You were a total badass, Jess. You were great.
Thank you. I know.
So let me ask you guys go ahead, Louise. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, I was just gonna say, I think we did a really good job handling it. Just as Jess said, no one knew anything. But our goal was always going to be the patient and, you know, making sure that their treatment wasn't going to be stopped or sidelined if it didn't have to be. So taking all precautions, I think we handled the situation really well.
Yeah. And I have to say, Angel, you probably can tell this already, having just met our great nurses and knowing me. I don't know if you know Dr. Gonzalez, but Louise and Dr. Gonzalez are really cool. They're very cool characters. They're like, nothing really phases them. Like, it's like, oh yeah, you have, you know, diphtheria and the coronavirus dipped in influenza and the Spanish flu and ulcerative colitis and DC diff. No problem. We got you. No problem. Me and Jess, on the other hand, we tend to be a little higher strung. It might be our Polish Italian genes or something, but definitely we roll a little more high stress and a little more, I wanted to say, Louise, your calm approach to a very difficult time was appreciated. And I know you kept our patients, because let's think about this, Croc Nation. Our oncology patients are extraordinarily susceptible. They're very high risk. They have low counts. Many people are elderly, and some of them are very, 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 very sick. Yeah. And they were freaked out. And thank God, Louise, Dr. G, and Jess, I'm not saying you and I were useless and we were screaming in a corner, but, you know, we were almost there, you know, where we had these other guys that were just straight up. But thank you for that, guys. Absolutely. Appreciate that.
Balance.
As far as special interests, I know, you guys in a general oncology practice, before this, you guys were at Hackensack. So you saw the high dose chemotherapy patients, the bone marrow transplant patients. But in this, how do you guys like the general oncology clinic, where you get a nice taste, except for, of course, thyroid, which is Jess's favorite? which are very complex, difficult cases. But as far as seeing a breast cancer patient followed by a prostate cancer patient, followed by a colorectal cancer patient, lung cancer patient, how do you guys feel professionally about that nice sort of diversity of practice?
I personally really enjoy it. The thing about bone marrow transplant is you really met people at the end of their journey, so to speak. And the bone marrow transplant was almost like the final destination. And it was really great to be a part of that transition for them. But in our current practice, we get to see people at all phases of their journey. Sometimes we see patients who are brandly diagnosed, emergent cases. We get to see patients who are years out doing really well. We get to see patients in the middle of their treatment. So I like the whole diversity of seeing all these different layers of patients. And that helps me just get a better appreciation of how good radiation is mixed in with the chemotherapy and the immunotherapy to be able to see these stage 3 and stage 4s doing really well. So for me personally, I really like getting to see those layers.
Yeah. Yeah. I think my favorite is, when they come in for follow-up with good news. And responded well to treatment. We can see it sometimes on imaging. If they, have their imaging available, we can really see a great response, or even symptomatically, if they come in for palliative treatment and, they're in excruciating pain upon our first time meeting them. And then, after their treatment finishes, they come in walking and happy and pain-free. It's pretty amazing to witness.
Yeah, that is one of my favorite things as well. Yeah. You guys are actually, me and Dr. Gonzalez were sort of on that back end of the curve, and you guys are just getting into your stride. So this is sort of a mixed question. You may not be able to see much of a difference, but is there a difference in your nursing perspective from when you first started, maybe when you were students to where you are now, as far as how you're seen, the level of respect for you guys, the level of independence you're able to achieve now compared to when you first started?
Yeah, I think so. Go ahead, Louise.
No, I think so. I think that also comes with just confidence from growing into the nursing role personally, where you're able to hold your ground a little bit more and speak up for your role and for your patients as an advocate, and to share in those decision-making opportunities with the provider and with the patient. I think that comes with, you know, time, but also with all your own personal confidence to be able to step up into that role and announce that you're here and you're ready to, you know, be looked at differently too.
Yeah.
How about you, Jess? What do you think?
Yeah. I mean, I 100% agree with what Louise just said, but I also, you know, just want to add that we learn something new every day. So yes, yeah. I definitely know so much more than what I knew when I first started my nursing career, but every day I go into work and I learn something new, whether it's something about a disease, about a treatment, or just, you know, a story that somebody shares with me. So it's never ending. So always learning something new.
Do you feel that the practitioners now are looking at nurse practitioners differently than they did 10 years ago, 7 years ago, whenever you guys were coming out of training?
I think even when I was in nursing school, to be honest, like the nurse practitioner role wasn't as big as it is now. I definitely think within the last maybe like 5 years or so, it's really when nurse practitioners and physician assistants became more actually, I think physician assistants, I want to say, were recognized a little bit before nurse practitioners. I think the role of the NP is it's newer, evolving, we're growing, and there's a lot of direction for us to go to.
That's actually a perfect segue, Jess. Let's talk about the future and what should happen. And let's talk a little bit about shared decision-making. And it's a really good table setting for when we talk to all these great practitioners from around the world next week. Tell us about your experience in our clinic. And again, it's a very small sample size, or a community hospital or whatever. You're in a room with a patient and, you know, we see, let's use prostate cancer as a perfect example. There's so many different ways of treating these patients that they, you know, my responsibility is to make sure I articulate every single possible, evidence-based, option available to them that has the equal efficacy. And then there's 8 or 9 things on the table. I tell them a little bit about side effects, and then I'm off to the next room and you're standing there or sitting there. I see a future where you guys are really helping these patients make these decisions, and wanted to get your take on that.
Yeah, I think, you know, you definitely introduce everything to them and do a really good job explaining everything. The nurses, I also want to credit, you know, the registered nurses that are in there, because they're doing a lot of educating about side effects. So I think the biggest issue when the patients come in and know nothing about their treatment is they're afraid of the side effects. And, you know, they probably have heard horror stories from somebody that they knew somebody that this happened to them. So, and this could have been, you know, from treatment from years ago, 30, 40 years ago, where, you know, treatment was so much different than it is now. So just making them feel comfortable with knowing what to expect during their treatment, and really taking the time to go over all the side effects, what we can help to do and to prevent the side effects. That's one of our biggest roles as well, is, your role is to introduce all the treatment summary, all the treatments, and summarize it. But our role is really just to talk about the side effects and how we're going to help manage them and how we're going to be supporting them throughout their whole process. Even after their treatment finishes, you know, we're going to be available for follow-ups. They can always call us. That's what's great about our practice, is that we're pretty much available at all times. They can feel free to call us at any time.
Louise?
Yeah, I agree. And I do think that we do, I don't want to say help guide the decision of the patient, but we certainly help bring clarity to their decision-making process by reinforcing what's been already spoken about by you, but also helping them find out what really is the best selection for them, because there are a lot of options for them. And sometimes they can eliminate some right off the bat, and others they have a really challenging time. So being able to just spend a little bit more time with them to help dig out what any barriers would be to a specific treatment, what the benefits are versus the risks. So I think that we do help give some clarity to the patient and helping them decide what's the right journey for them.
And I think you do. And I think the point of the paper, my take home message, and again, we'll dive deeply into this with the authors, but is that you guys are the unsung heroes of shared decision-making. And there's a really neat quote, oncology nurses not only have broad knowledge of the medical side of difficult decisions, difficult decisions about chemotherapy, surgery, radiation, and other treatments that may affect life expectancy and quality of life, but they also routinely learn patients' preferences, their values. Given that shared decision-making reconciles those elements, nurses are well-positioned to be partners in shared decision-making. And I think this podcast really does demonstrate that, you know, from your core values as nurses and nurse practitioners, your core values on what you want to do to be advocates for your patients. And I think that this is a really important subject, and I'm really looking forward to doing the deep dive. There's four instances, or I guess they would say subtopics, you guys as care team members. And again, probably underappreciated for decades, if not a century. And now we're finally starting to appreciate you guys. Decision coaches, patient advocates, which you nurses have always been the patient advocate, and ongoing liaison to help patients through the fourth trimester. So what a fantastic opportunity. You guys set a perfect table for us. Don't you think, Angel?
I would say it's more like a perfect example of what we are looking for as a patient and as somebody who recently had surgery and somebody also who had COVID as well in September of 2020. It's remarkable to hear the camaraderie that you have, but as somebody who just came in and into your life, Tom, you know, and has been around radiation oncology and being front and center in how your team works, it makes sense. And for those of you that are listening out there, you know, you'll listen to shows, you'll listen to podcasts, you'll listen to things, and you'll say, I wonder if they're really like that. What you're hearing is what you get. And seeing is believing. And I'm one of those people. So I will say that to be a part of a team is the most important thing, but to have the ability to do what you do at your best and enjoy it. And even during a pandemic and able to learn from it and get closer and bond because of it. I mean, that's, you can't even describe, you can't even put a perfect word to describe the team that you have. And I want to also point out, I've always been taught you're only as good as your staff, right? And the team makes the team. You have.
You know, Jack Welch always said, he was the famous business guy. He always said, I want a team where when I walk into a room, I'm the dumbest person in that room. And I really feel that way with Louise and Jess and Dr. Gonzalez. You guys are amazing, amazing, amazing. Using another sports analogy, not utilizing you properly, not giving you guys the leash you need to practice to your level of comfort, not allowing you guys to express yourself fully is like taking Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig and Tom Seaver and just leaving them on the bench and not playing them. It would be very sad and would be a huge waste. So we're very grateful to you guys. We're just honoring you guys. We're just like swimming in the ocean of your greatness right now. We're just like the waves of your greatness, of the nursing greatness. It's like, we're just swimming there, baby. It's just, we're there. Girls, do you have any questions of Angel and us before we sign off?
No, I mean, I couldn't agree more with what Angel says. And I constantly say it to the patients. It's, you know, we just have a really great team. We have a really great team. And when they say thank you for the care that they've been given, I remind them that they should be getting this level of care everywhere, because we really, really are invested in every aspect of their treatment and quality of life. And I'm glad that we got to speak about it today. Thank you for having us. Thank you for taking the challenge with me and then letting me bring Jess with me. I think it was a great idea. And yeah.
Best thing I ever did.
Yeah. Got two for one with us.
And don't tell my wife that.
Doesn't listen on Sundays, does she?
No, definitely the greatest decision I ever made was to get you guys on this team. I want to thank you on behalf of all of the doctors and the administrators and to all the nurses, you guys representing all the nurses. Happy Nurses Week. We're having dinner, I think, in next week or 2 weeks to celebrate you all. I'm really looking forward to that. And hopefully not going to jail or anything crazy. We're going to really celebrate the heck out of you guys.
We can't leave.
I always give you the last word, Angel.
We can't leave yet. We can't leave yet, because this is the first time that from the moment we've been on the air, we have people that can share some stories.
Yes, they have stuff on me.
Here's my I have two questions. My first question.
Never opened up this can of worms.
Oh, yeah. Come on, man. I'm over here. I'm drooling. I've been waiting for my opportunity. So, you know, I want to touch base on one thing you said. You said that you did an interview, and your interview was based on getting to know them. So my first question will be a more professional question, then I'll leave the Sally question for part two. My first question is, knowing what he just said, because it didn't sound like an authentic type of styled interview that I guess I would have expected. Walk me through that interview process as far as not so much as the questions, but how you felt. Did you know after that interview? Because some people can go into an interview and say, I want this job, but then they get the interview and they're like, I really don't want it. If they offer it to me, I'll think about it. But it seemed like you guys all were on the same page. So how did the interview process feel to you?
Louise was there first. So if you want to go first, you can want to explain.
So the interview process, we actually spent a lot of time on the phone, getting a better understanding of what I was looking for, what he was looking for. And I think I pretty much told him that I might not be what he thinks he wants, but I think he really could want me, because I really felt like we could be a good match for what we're both wanting out of this new role. I was a new graduate and he was thinking of adding someone else to the practice. And I really felt really comfortable that even though it was an odd way to start off the interview with these, I think our first conversation was about 8 o'clock at night after my daughter went to bed. And it really did feel right. We had a very, and I feel every time we've had a conversation like that, very transparent, very honest, and really just talked about what we wanted. I think employment process is like a relationship, and we both have to be honest and we both have to be happy. And so it was definitely something that I came home and I was like, that is like not the type of interview I've had before, but it didn't surprise me because I had already spent some time on the phone with him. And I felt like it was actually a really good, honest and transparent conversation. And I felt very good about it.
Wow.
See, Angel, you didn't get anything from that.
We haven't got to the silly parts yet. What about you, Jess? How did that interview process work for you?
Yeah, so I mean, Louise kind of got me on board. She explained to me everything about Dr. E, so I kind of had an idea already of how he was before I even met him. I was kind of, when she first told me, oh, he wears a jersey, I'm like, every day with the patients? Like, never even heard about a doctor doing something like that. So I knew he was definitely going to be somebody special. And then that interview process, of course, you know, he wanted to make sure that whoever he was going to bring on to his team was going to be a good fit. And I appreciated that. I respected that. But, you know, during the process, I just had such a good vibe. It was such like a kind of like a family oriented. I felt like he was really just going to take me on under his wing. And that's how it's been since I've joined. And I think we all just like created a really like nice little bubble. I love our bubble.
I love our bubble. We have the greatest bubble ever.
We can't ignore the fact that as we're talking about how great these people of this team is, she's also at the process of rocking back and forth a newborn, and I commend you for that because you're just multitasking.
Yeah.
At this point. That's what she does at work as well. She's doing a follow-up and a skin check, and she's doing checking blood work.
Dr. E.
She's perfect. Actually, Angel, Jess got off easy. Poor Louise. Like, she was the firstborn, right? So it's like completely like, oh my God, she had to go through the gauntlet. She met with Regina. She met with Betty. She met with me. She met with Gonzalez. She met with my wife. She met with everybody.
Yes.
And like with Jess, it was like, oh, okay, Louise says you're cool. When can you start? You know, it was like pretty easy, you know. It was like the second kid, like Quinny is like, wow.
Yeah.
You know, you can watch pay-per-view, Quinny. I don't care, whatever you want.
So, but and then my final question would be, what would be we all know that Dr. E, and we're obviously going to pat him on the back. We're going to toot his horn right now. We're going to make,
I hate this part.
He does not like to be given acknowledgement. We can honestly safely say it from the time I've known him, which is very short. He is all about the patient. He's all about getting the message out. It's not about him, but I want to take the time to make it about him. So it's just something he did not expect me to do. What would you say if I were to say this in this phrase, Dr. Ian Ellie inspires me because, how would you finish that?
For me, it's to live life to its fullest. I think that his personality just exudes that, is really just enjoying your life and making each area of it, professional and personal, the best that it can be. And, you know, being honest with yourself about what's going to make you happy and going after that.
Yeah. And really just, you know, I've always wanted a career, a job where I felt like I wasn't going into work, that I was going to love what I do. You know what, that quote that says, find a job that you love. You never have to work a day in your life. And he absolutely, you know, lives up to that. He loves work. He loves his patients more than anything. It's not even a job to him. This is just what he loves to do. And I admire that so much. You know, he really works hard and loves what he does and makes everybody feel so comfortable and appreciates everybody, you know, makes it known how much he appreciates all of us. You know, not every doctor or boss is going to buy you, you know, lunches and do Super Bowl lunches for all that, for, you know, like for so many weeks in a row. It's pretty amazing. It's unlike I've never, ever experienced working with anybody like that.
So as comfortable as you guys are right
Angel,
now.
Angel, it was really nice working with you. I'm going to be looking for a new producer coming up.
Now I will officially have the last word. And this is what I would like to say to all of you, especially those listening, but mostly to the two young ladies that are in front of us here today. As a patient, as somebody who has a lot of faith in what you do, I want to personally say thank you on behalf of everyone out there for putting yourselves first, for putting the patient first, but more importantly, for putting aside your families for as many weeks as it was during a pandemic to acknowledge the fact that even though there were things going outside in the real world, there were just as more important things happening in front of you. And I want to leave you with something that I read a while back on my podcast that I think is only fitting to you two and all those that you work with. And it goes like this. Some people believe there are beings that come to you in your darkest hour, guide you when your life hangs in the balance, cradle you, calm you, protect you. Some people call them guardian angels. We call them nurses.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah,
and it's absolutely true. Ladies, thank you for coming on. Please, would you consider coming on again?
Of course.
Yeah.
On behalf of Angel Santana, Have Faith, Let It Begin, Rod Freeman, Small Biz Up, John Michael Benzea, and Charlotte Larson, our beautiful patrons out in Hollywood, I thank you. I want to take 1 minute and finally thank every single nurse, every single Croc Nation person. Go out there and thank a nurse for everything that they do for us, everything they do for you. This is your friend, Dr. Tom Ianelli, this Croc survivor, bus driver, ending the podcast as he always does, speaking of himself in the third third person. We wish you a very long, healthy, happy, cancer-free life. We will see you next week with our friends from Denmark and from Canada and from Texas. God bless. Peace. Girls, did you have fun? I told you you'd have fun.
It was great. Thank you for having me.
Cool. Yeah.